Good morning, everybody. And as always, our limud of halacha for Torah way is l'schus refua of Yosef Dov Ben Chayla, hishtav refua shleima b'korah b'sar shachayli Yisrael. And we continue with our daily dose of Lashon Hara. So, we learned yesterday that the Chofetz Chaim Paskins, there's mutter to tell lies, that sheker is mutter. And you have to put that into context, obviously. And I had a challenge from one of the people who were listening about the psukim. So, the Chofetz Chaim says as follows, that if somebody is begging you, is pestering you, to tell them, what did Plony say about me? I need to know what he said. I need to know, yeah, people feel that way, that they heard that somebody was speaking about them, or that somebody's done something against them, and you know, I'm convinced that you know what it is that he did or what it is that he said, and I'm pestering you. And as we said, sometimes it might be somebody for whom you have to have derech eretz. It could be a rabbi, it could be a parent, it could be a relative, it could be somebody much older than you who's pestering you. Please, you must tell me, what does Plony say? The Chofetz Chaim says, if you can get out of it, if you can avoid the answer, then avoid the answer. If you can't avoid the answer, says the Chofetz Chaim, it's mutter to say sheker. You can say, I don't know, or I don't remember. Yeah, you can find some other way, even though it's not true. You know exactly what he said, you were there, and you know exactly what he said. But if you tell this person what Plony said about him, then he's going to create animosity between the two. So that is mamash pure rechilus, and that is osa. Anything that's going to have a result of creating any distance between two people, that's going to be rechilus. It's Lashon Hara plus. It's not just Lashon Hara, but it's Lashon Hara that creates animosity, and that will be osa. So the raya is, yeah, the Gemara brings down the raya from Soro and Avraham. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent the Malachim and gave the news to Sora that she was going to have a baby at the age of 90. She was 89 at the time. And she said, Acharei v'loisi hoyso li etno. She said, is it possible that now that I'm already old and shriveled, that I should be able to have a baby? V'adoini zokein, and my husband is old. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu complained to Avraham Avinu, it says there, Vayoma Hashem el Avraham, Loma zeh tzochako sora lemo, why did Sora doubt what I was saying? How from ele v'ani zokanti? So in other words, can I possibly have a baby when I am old? So I said yesterday, the Gemara says that the Rebbein Shem was Mishana the Loshon. Okay, he wasn't actually Mishana the Loshon, he repeated only half the story. In other words, yeah, I think there's an expression, I think came from Mrs. Thatcher, about being economical with the truth. You know, that the Rebbein Shem repeated Taka that Sora doubted that she could have a baby, but the bit that she added on to that, she said, Acharei v'loisi hoiso li etno, and the Rebbein Shem related that to Avraham Avinu in different words, that your wife Sora said, how can I possibly have a baby when I'm already old and shriveled? Yeah, but all the Rebbein Shem did was he left out the bit that said Vardoini Zokein. The fact that she said that not only am I old and shriveled, but my husband is ancient. That bit, Vardoini Zokein, that my husband is ancient, that the Rebbein Shem left out. And why did the Rebbein Shem leave it out and told only a half a truth? He told half a truth, and this is the business that we have, as I mentioned, about going to court and saying, I will tell the truth. And the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And the question is, if you're telling the truth, what is the whole truth? And what is nothing but the truth? So this is an example of it. The whole truth, yeah, is that Rebbein Shem would tell Avraham Avinu that your wife doubted that she could possibly have a baby because she's so old, and she said that you are ancient as well, that you're also beyond the capability of having a baby. That you, because why? Because she said basically, I'm 90. I'm 89, and my husband is 99. How can we have a baby? The Rebbein Shem only told half the truth. Rebbe Desta gives the example. If you get asked in the witness box, Rebbe Desta says, if you get asked in the witness box, is the library open on Wednesdays? Well, so you could, all people who give expert evidence, in fact, all people who give evidence in court are coached by the barrister only to say, mamash, Say as little as possible. Answer short, sharp answers. Don't start darshaning, even though you've got the urge to do so, because they'll pick you up on what you've said and they'll try and make you, make contradictions. So therefore, Dessa says, if you answer, is the library open on Wednesdays? Yes, it's MS. If you answer no, it's MS. But neither of them are the whole truth, because the library is open half day on Wednesdays. The library is open in the morning and it's closed in the afternoon. So therefore, neither of them is MS. Neither of them is MS. They're both Shekhar until you give the complete answer that it's open half day and half day. The Rebbeinu Shloim changed it Mipnei HaSholoim, and similarly says the Chofetz Chaim, Mipnei HaSholoim, one can change the story if you have no choice whatsoever in order to avoid telling Rechilos. We're at Torreway, Northwest London, 30th of October, Kof Ches Tishri, Harav Nachman Zeltzer Shlita, on the subject of Open Nisim.
So in England, they're both all true. It's true that the library is open on Wednesday. It's true that the library is open closed. But the whole truth is that the library is open half day.
Semantics.
It's not semantics. Not at all.
Good morning, everybody. It's good to be back over here. It's been a while. Okay, so I would like to go back a few days to Bereshis, to Cain and Hevel, because there's a very interesting sugya, the two brothers. So the world is a brand new place. There's nobody here. It's Adam and Chav, there's two boys, and that's it. There's no reason for anyone, there's no reason for these two boys to not get along. You think, if just two boys, there's no reason not to get along. You take half, I'll take half, Shalom Yisrael. It doesn't take long for major disagreements to break out, and ironically the fight comes about because of a good thing and the desire to do a mitzvah. What happens? Cain has an idea to give a present to Hashem, which shows that Cain is a thinker. He's also a doer. How do I know? Because it's Cain's job to work the land. He's a doer. The whole world belongs to him. He's the owner. He's the real estate guy. Hevel, on the other hand, he owns the animals. So Cain comes up with a major chiddush, with a new concept. Remember, everything in the world is new, every new idea. It's everything you do, you smile, you're the first person to smile. You get angry, you're the first person to get angry. Cain comes up with a new idea. What's his new idea? Bring a carbon to Hashem, to give thank you for all the good I've been given. It's a pretty major chiddush when you think about it. How major is this idea that the whole world bought into it on some level or another? We're still doing it. Everybody does it. So he brings the carbon, but not his best stuff, which is interesting. Because if you're the innovator of a concept, why do you take it all the way? Instead, he brings a mediocre carbon. And Hevel's watching his brother. He sees what Cain is doing. And Hevel says, this is a great idea. It's such a great idea. I'm also going to bring a carbon. Except Hevel gets it right. And he brings the best carbon that he can. And what's the outcome? Hashem chooses Hevel's carbon above Cain's carbon. And Cain feels slighted. So I want to ask you a question. If a parent is trying to mechanech, if a parent is trying to mechanech a child, let's say you have two kids who draw pictures for their mother, they want to make their mother a picture, and they bring the pictures to the mother and show her the pictures that they made for her. Yeah? And she takes a look at one picture and she says, beautiful, that's a beautiful picture. And then she looks at the other picture and she says, I don't like it. Terrible. That's the worst picture I ever saw. What kind of a mother is this? Right? Is this the way you educate your children? So Hashem is doing that. Hashem's saying to Hevel, I love your carbon. Are we okay now? How are we doing? Still not? It's not good? No? What should I do? Should I stand up? Should I go? Why can't Hashem say to Cain, you know, I see you tried, you'll get it better next time. Why is he being so tough? Well, can you imagine, you have a mother with two pictures, and one she says is beautiful, and one she says is terrible?
Say the whole truth.
Yeah? Yeah, is that the way your father, that's what they did back then. Okay, so, by the way, it says about the whole truth. You want to talk about truth. The only mitzvah in the Torah, it says, just try to tell the truth. It's been by Shekhar Tircha. It doesn't say, like the Shekhar. It says, stay away from falsehood. So we see that when it comes to Shalom, there's falsehood. Okay. So So what's going on over here? Can Hashem accept Hevel's carbon and compliment him? And accept Cain's carbon and make it clear, you could have been better. Right? We look at the Torah as a chinuch manual for us. What chinuch message is Hashem giving us over here? So you have to understand. Why is Hashem acting? Why is he giving mechanech over here? We have to learn for the whole world. We have to learn for all eternity about chinuch over here. So, what if I tell you the story of these two kids making pictures of their mother has nothing to do with the story of Cain and Hevel? Why? Because both of the two kids are doing their best to make pictures for their mother. They're both trying the hardest. It so happens to be that one of the kids is more talented than the other, so their picture is better. But both were trying. In such a case, if the mother compliments one child and knocks the second child, we would say she's a terrible mother. But imagine if you have two kids who make the mother a picture, one puts a lot of thought into it, and they use their paints, and a lot of detail, and the other scribbles on a piece of paper, doesn't put any effort into it. Or one of the kids comes home, they want to buy their mother flowers for Shabbos. So one of them goes to the and finds flowers and picks them and makes a bouquet. And the other one grabs some weeds they find lying in the street and wraps them in a wet newspaper and brings it to their mother, dripping dirty water on the floor. And she says, "Here, Ma, I bought you a present." Right? The mother's like, "I don't want these weeds. Don't bring me weeds. What is this?" So Hevel's, Cain and Hevel are scenario number two. Hevel's the kid who put an effort, who really tried, who showed he cared. And Cain threw some weeds into a piece of paper and said, "Here, Hashem, take my weeds." And Hashem said, "I don't want your weeds. No, I don't want your weeds. Because you didn't put in any effort. You're being mezalzel to me." It's disrespect. It's not a question here of Cain against Hevel. It's a question of Cain against Cain. This is not the way you give a present to someone. And the question becomes more powerful when we remember that Cain was the one who came up with the idea in the first place. It's so hard to understand. You came up with the idea, get it right. Why are you stopping? If you're the one who's mechadish the idea of giving a present, then give a present. Right? I always tell my we have a lot of guests for Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael, Baruch Hashem. So there's kind of different kind of gifts you can bring someone. You can come to the house with a beautiful, a big candy platter, a beautiful bottle of wine, or you can come with like some old ragalach. And bring it to them. And I said, "Do you want this? If you don't want this, why are you bringing it to someone else, right? What's the rule of thumb when it comes to giving presents? Give something that you would want to get yourself." So as a joke, sometimes they bring old rugalach and they say, "Here, this is a joke. We don't mean it, but they know my students. They say it as a joke." But the point is, it's a big nekuda when it comes to gift giving. So the mafresh. Okay, so what's going on over here? According to, it seems to be, Cain came up with the idea first, and Hevel copied him. And in the case of the innovator coming in second. And he had a great idea, which is the idea of bringing a present, but he got stuck in the middle. Right? Like, imagine if the Wright brothers would have had the idea to fly a plane that could lift itself off the ground, but they got stuck with turning around. They couldn't get over the water. So we wouldn't be talking about them. We only remember them because they took the idea, and they went with it, and they ran with it, and they turned it into something that was huge. And Cain had a great idea, but he got stuck in the middle. Now, some want to say that Cain may have been, I don't like this pshat so much, but there are those who suggest that Cain was like, he was bribing Hashem. Like, he looked at Hashem like he doesn't, like, maybe stay out of my life, he says. Don't be too involved. I don't know, like, my life is good, I like it, I'm here as a little bribe. This is for you. I don't like that pshat, but as always, some people say that, I don't like it. I think I liked the shot where he was trying to show across the toif. And he messed up. He can make people make mistakes. He was trying to show across the toif. I want to thank you. But somehow he didn't take his chiddush far enough. And he thought a little present was enough. And Hevel, he said, "No, you're wrong. It's a good idea to give a present. But you gotta take it all the way." And Hashem liked what he did and kind of hated his brother for it. And here we see a very interesting turn of events, everybody. Very interesting. Because what happens? Hashem turns his present away. Now the question is, you would say, okay, is Hashem angry at Cain? Cain brought a present to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Is Hashem angry at him? He likes Hevel's, but he doesn't like Cain. So is he angry? So let's look at the Chumash. So you look at the Chumash, the word of the Chumash, and Hashem's not angry at Cain. He's not angry at him. And he says to him, "Lefeta chatas roivitz, your sin is saved for your grave. Lelecha teshukasai." As Rashi says, the Yetzirah is trying to convince you to do an Aveira. But at the Tim Shalboy, But if you want, you could overcome him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling Cain, you were just side. I'm not upset at you. You tried. You made a mistake. You have a Yetzer Hara. Okay, get it right. Do teshuva. You can do teshuva. Hashem is not angry with him. Just do teshuva. Bring me another carbon. It's okay. Just bring me another. Go home and bring me another carbon. And next time, bring me your best stuff. And this time will be amazing. So Cain does not do that. Cain does not do teshuva. He is so angry at his brother for stealing his idea, going the distance, of flying the plane. He finds him in the field, and this is the first time in the history where someone is doing this. He beats his brother to death. He doesn't even know he's doing what he's doing until he does it. I guess he feels on a primal level that if he hits him hard enough for enough time, something's going to happen, and something happens. Maybe also another pshat, he's so jealous, is because Kai Hevel was born with two sisters, Kai was born with one sister. Because he had a lot of issues going on over there. And he kills him. And he doesn't even know what to do with the body because nobody ever killed anyone before. So the Medrash says that he saw two birds fighting, and one bird then killed the other bird, and then the bird flew over with dirt and covered the body with dirt. So he knew that you bury a body. It's unbelievable. It's almost the first day of the world. You know, this is humanity. One day we can't go without messing up. Right? You ask him? It's crazy. At any rate, Cain kills Hevel. He doesn't do teshuvah. He doesn't bring another carbon. He doesn't return to Hashem. He does none of these things. Instead, he kills his brother. What do we see from this? We see a person who made a mistake. And when he was shown the error of his ways, he made things worse. We see people stuck. You have a kasha?
It's in the first day of the world.
First week of the world. The Cain and Hevel are what I meant by the first day is that Adam and Chava couldn't get through one day. Right? People. Yeah?
They're adults. So it's really...
They were all adults. They were all born adults. Yeah? Those first people. Yeah. They couldn't get through. Yeah, they weren't born babies. And they couldn't get through one day. Adam and Chava, Hashem said, do whatever you want. I let you do whatever you want. Eat whatever you want. Drink whatever you want. Just one thing. No iced coffee. They couldn't go one day without messing up. That's people. That's humanity. It's an amazing thing. That's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created people. We see people get stuck in old habits. It's not even an old habit here. He was just born. But we get stuck in our habits. We can't break free from old thought processes. There's no reason for Cain not to bring another carbon. Unless Cain is so sure his original reason for bringing the carbon was good enough and his original carbon was good enough. And maybe, and this is a possibility, why he thought it was a good... What was he thinking? Maybe we could say Cain was under the misconception that he was the giver. When he gave a carbon to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no matter how good or not good it was, it didn't matter because I am the giver and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the taker. We could suggest such a concept. It's very hard to say it. Again, it's a misconception because no matter how you give to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're still the taker because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you the chayles to give. So you're always going to be the taker versus HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And yet maybe, this is a svara, that maybe that was his cheshbon. I'm the giver. I'm giving to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, no, you're not the giver. You're always going to be the taker. I'm always going to be the giver. So I want to tell you a story that brings out this nekuda. Because I believe this nekuda really, it's in every interaction we have with people, we have to ask ourselves, who's the giver, who's the taker? So I was on the Muncie bus, going from Muncie to Borough Park, and I got a call. This guy calls me up, he says, I have to tell you a story. So he tells me, I'm from Five Towns, and I have children living in Arizona. And my son made a bar mitzvah in Arizona. So so we're going to Arizona for Shabbos. It's beautiful. So my wife tells me that there are a certain type of people in Five Towns, they're not Hasidish, but they like to wear bekishes. And a certain kind of people, maybe they have this in London also, I don't know. But there are certain people, they're Hasidish, but they wear Bekesh, they're proudly the Hasidish Lavush. So his wife says to him like this, we're going to Arizona. In Arizona, nobody wears a Bekesh on Shabbos. So let's leave your Bekesh over here in the Five Towns. He said, okay, I'm going to leave my Bekesh in the Five Towns, but I'm going to wear my tzitzis outside on my shirt. I said, I think to myself, I don't see the difference. If you're wearing tzitzis outside already, I don't know the difference, but that's how he said, okay. Shalom Bayis, look at the Bekesha, back home. So he said, I flew out to Arizona for Shabbos, and I'm a person who likes to get ready for Shabbos early. By 2:30, I'm ready dressed. I'm ready sitting and being Mavisedra, Kugel. I'm ready to get ready for Shabbos. But I get a call from my son who's there for the Bar Mitzvah. He says, Ta, I need you to help me with something. I said, What do you need? He said, I need to give back my rental car. So could you please drive with me to the rental car place? And then when I get back the car, you could take me back to the house. So I said, Tzadik, I'm already dressed for Shabbos. You know I like to get ready for Shabbos early. He said, I know, but I need to get the rental car. So you know, you can say no to everyone in the whole world, but when your kid says to you, I need, it's very hard. So he gives it, he says, but do me a favor, please don't wait too late, please. Not too late, please. I don't want to get stuck before Shabbos. He said, no problem. Of course, by the time he got to me, it was an hour and a half before Shabbos. We drove to the rental car place, we had no problems. But then, things became a little complicated on the way back. It's already an hour before Shabbos. We're driving back towards the house. It's 5 miles away. It's not a big deal. And the roads in Arizona are very, very wide. I was in Arizona. The roads are very wide. There's like the big highways. And I don't know how it's possible to have a traffic jam in Arizona. But there was a traffic jam. I don't know how, Chad. But I asked someone from Arizona. They said, yeah, maybe once in my life. But that Erev Shabbos was a traffic jam. And we're inching along, he tells me. I'm getting very nervous. So Yid, there's a clock, a special clock, an Erev Shabbos clock. That when you're in traffic on the highway and you can't get to where you need to get to before Shabbos, that clock, it feels like it's going a million miles an hour. And I'm feeling terrible. And then he says, to make matters worse, suddenly, there's a flat tire. What am I going to do? It's out before Shabbos, stuck on the highway, traffic jam, flat tire. Mamashi, a nightmare. So I pulled off the highway, bumped off the highway to like a little street. It's like middle America. American flags. Apple pie, 4th of July, Mamish America. And there's a family sitting outside the house, just taking in the air. And I said, I went over to them, he told me, I said, hi, I'm from New York, and I asked you for a favor. I'm going to pay you to drive me 5 miles from here to Scottsdale. I'm stuck here, the Sabbath is coming. So the man says, I want to help you, but I have to get my kid to sports camp, and my daughter to doll camp, so I can't help you. So, okay, can't help. So I went across the street, I found another family, I knocked on the door. Can you drive me 5 miles? No big deal, I'll pay you. He said, I want to help you, but I got to get my kid to trampoline camp, and I got to get my daughter to babysitting theory, and I will, kids are not in the game. So we're like, what are we going to do? It's Mamish now, 45 minutes to Shabbos. So I told my son, my phone's all dead, and nothing's working. I said, listen, we have no barrier. We're gonna walk. We're gonna walk. I'll leave the keys under the tire. I'm gonna walk. That's it. Emalasot. So standing there by the car, about to start walking, and suddenly a little car pulls up, and sitting in the front seat is an African American guy, and his wife and his kid in the back. So he pulls down the window. He says to me, "What are you doing here so close to Shabbos?" I said, how do you know about this? He goes, me? Oh, I work for Chabad in Arizona. What are you doing? I see the tzitzis and everything. I said, yeah, it's a problem. He said, I'll take you. Get in the car. I'll take you wherever you need to go. So he moves all the stuff into the trunk. We got in the car, me and my son. And I told him, I want to tell you. I told the Rebbetzin. So I got to tell you. Sometimes people like to do chesed, but the wife's not into it. I see you're very happy. It's beautiful. A couple both want to do chesed. He drives me to the shul, Scottsdale. I got there, as the chazan says, I walk into shul, my tzitzis mamash just in time. It was a beautiful Shabbos, and Shabbos, I went back to that street, I had to make sure the rental company picks up the car. So I'm standing over there, waiting, and I thought, am I going to see my African-American friend? So the car pulls up, and he's there. He says, Nu, how was Shabbos? I said, Shabbos was great. How was yours? No, I didn't say that. I said, I want to tell you something. In all seriousness now, you don't know what you did for me. So he looks at me and he says to me, no, you don't know what you did for me. Now, I don't know if he understands the amkus of what he was saying. I don't know. But I can tell you, he said something very true. Because he's a guy, and a guy has no shaykhs in Shabbos, he can't keep Shabbos, and a guy should shavas his chayav miso. But if a guy facilitates that a Jew is able to keep Shabbos because of something that he did, the schar, we can't even fathom the schar. So when he said, you don't know what you did for me, he's speaking the truth. He tells me 2 weeks later, I'm in Borough Park, on the side of the road, and doing something in my car, and suddenly there's a knock on the window. So I look up and I see there's one of the Borough Park collectors standing there. So I did a universal gesture, like this. This is the universal gesture, which it doesn't necessarily mean I don't have money, but it means I don't want to give. So then he knocks on my window again, and I went like that, and he knocks on my window. So I put down the window and I said, what do you want? He says, I can't walk, he tells me. I have a hard time walking. Could you do me a favor? Could you drive me to Shem Shabbos? So I'm thinking to myself, 2 weeks ago, I'm stuck in Arizona. I need a ride. And this guy needs a ride to Shem Shabbos. Of course. I said, get in the car. So he gets in the car. And we drive to Shem Shabbos. And when he gets to Shem Shabbos, he gets out of the car and he tells me, thank you so much. You don't know what you did for me, he tells me. And I said, no. You don't know what you did for me. Rabbi Yisai, this is teeth. This is a yisoid in life, and it's in every interaction we have with our wives, our children, our parents, HaKadosh Baruch. A man comes to your door for tzedakah, and you feel great. Look at me. I gave him 100 pounds. What happened here? He gave you Chaya Olam, he gave you Gan Eden, and you gave him 100 pounds. Who's the giver? Who's the taker? So the question we have to ask ourselves, who is giving to whom in life? Cain made a mistake. He thought he was giving to Hashem. What about us? Do we understand what Hashem gives us when we learn a sugya? Right? Do we think we're giving Hashem? Is he giving us? We give tzedakah. Are we giving the ani or is he giving us? Whose money is it? We have to look at this through the glasses of every interaction of who is the giver and who is the taker. What's the relationship? Especially HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I think it's the biggest story for us. I'll tell you, this is the nekud that I wanted to talk about today. But I'll tell you, because I have 7 minutes left, I'll tell you one other story that to me is one of the most powerful stories one of my most favorite stories. So it goes back to Yossi Weil. So Rabbi Weil told me, I already finished writing the book, Incredible. And he tells me, I have one story I forgot to tell you. I said, okay, all right. So he came to the Chavish to meet. So he tells me, this story went back to 86. I just became the head of Arachim. And one day I was in my house getting ready for a meeting. I had a staff coming over, the staff in charge of the meeting for the Shabbatons for college students. And they were coming over and there's a knock on my door. So I open the door and I see a rabbi standing there. So my initial reaction was to put my hand in my pocket. She said, no, I don't want money. So I said, what do you want? He said, I want to talk to you. I'm thinking, okay, you want a lot of money. Anyways, yeah. He said, no, I want to talk to you. So I said, I want to talk to you also, but I have a meeting starting now in my house for about an hour. So you could either come back or you could wait in my office. He said, I'll wait in your office. Kitzer, the meeting went longer than I thought. The hour and a half, I felt bad. He's sitting in my office, an hour and a half. Finally, it's finished, and I come in, they leave, and I said to him, Shalom Aleichem, what's your name? He said, my name is Rav Shimshon Pinkus, he told me. And I'm the Rav in Ofakim. I said, Shalom Aleichem, I never heard of him, he told me. I never heard of this man. Ofakim is a little city down south. I never heard of it. I never heard of him. Maybe heard of Ofakim. I never heard of him. What can I do for you? He says, no, what can I do for you? So what could you do for me? He said, I recently in my city, I see people are becoming frum. A taxi driver was never frum, suddenly he's wearing a yarmulke. And I said to him, what happened? He said, I went to Arachim Shabbaton and I became frum. I see this guy sells the vegetables in the shuk, he has a yarmulke. I said, what happened? He said, I went to Arachim thing. So I said, I have to meet you and see what's going on with you. You're making people frum. But now I heard your meeting, I realize it's so much greater than I thought. I really want to help you. So Rabbi Weil says, okay, how are you going to help me? He says, you don't understand, I have a lot of context. I have a lot of contacts in America, and I want to give you all my contacts. I want you to have all my list. I want to bring you to America and introduce you to all my people. So I said, okay. He didn't believe he's really gonna do it. But the next day, he calls him. He said, I booked the tickets already. Going to America. We'll stay at my parents' house in Queens. So we flew to America, he said. And he took me to all the people he knew, all his people on the list in Borough Park and Flappers and Muncie and Baltimore. He took me everywhere. And after a few weeks, Rapika says, "I have to, Yossi, I got to go back there to Israel. I have a kehillah, I have a family, I got all these things going on. I took the liberty of setting you up in a meeting with the richest Jew in the world, but you have to go by yourself." Now, who is 86? Who's the richest Jew in the world, everyone? Rav Moshe Eichlin, Oliver Shalom, the richest Jew in the world. The Durachman family was so rich at that time. Fortune magazine did a piece on them, a cover piece, called The Bashful Billionaires. They were on the 10 richest families in the world, not Jewish, richest families. They would have been, if Canary Wharf would have worked out, they would have been the richest people in the world. Kadosh Baruch Hu said no. But this is still when they're up on top. And Yossi Wallace has a chance. Now, if it goes well, who knows what's going to happen here? So he says to Pinkus, "Don't worry. I'm a big boy. I could go by myself." And he flies to Toronto. And it's the winter in Toronto. If any of you ever went to Toronto in the winter, you know, Toronto in the winter is not a fun place to be. Although Torontonians, they don't mamish understand this. I was there in Toronto once and it was the winter. And a Shabbos afternoon, I was looking out the window and I saw, it was snowing outside. And I saw a woman and her daughter walking down the street eating ice cream cones. I don't know. I saw this, my own eyes. The kids are, it's winter time. He's from Eretz Yisrael and he's, and it's pouring rain, and he tells the driver, "Drive me." He doesn't have time to go to his host to unpack. He's, "Drive me to Reichman's house." And he gets to the house 20 minutes early. And he gets out of the car, and he says, "Wait here." He rings the bell. "Who is it?" "Yossi Wallace from Israel." "Oh, Rabbi Wallace, Mr. Reichman's in a meeting now. Could you come back in 20 minutes?" Now, if it was me, I would have said, it's pouring rain outside. "Can I please come in?" But he didn't say it. He said, "Okay." And he waited outside. He told the taxi, "Could you wait?" The taxi said, "I can't wait. I got to go." So he's standing outside, pouring rain, in his, with his suitcases and his suit and his hat. He told me after 2 minutes, my hat was crushed. He's his words, "I look like a bum from the Bowery." Kids, sir, after 20 minutes, he rings the bell. "Yeah, you could come in." He walks in with his suitcases, Lake Ontario. And Mr. Eichel says, "What, are you moving in? What's going on over here?" He says, "No, and the water's coming in on the carpets." He says, "No, I just had enough time to unpack." Rabbi said, "You know what? I don't know if that ever happened to you. You have a business meeting or important meeting, and this person has the yicholas to really help you, and it's just not going. You ever happened to you? It's just not going." And he's trying name dropping my uncle and your cousin, and not going. And he's with Mr. Eichmann, and he's thinking, this guy can mamish put Archim on the map. And then Moshe Eichmann says to him, "Can I see a brochure?" And he's thinking, "What do you need a brochure for? Ask me whatever you want. A brochure." Okay, he wants a brochure. So Yossi Wallace, he doesn't know where they are. He didn't unpack yet. So he gets to get down on the floor. The carpet's wet because of the water. His pants are wet. He's on the floor, in the wet floor with his wet pants, opening a suitcase to look for brochures in the home of the richest Jew in the world. And he opens up one suitcase and he picks up the piles of undershirts and shorts and pants, and he's looking for brochures and he can't find it in that suitcase. So he goes to the other suitcase and he opens it up and he's looking on the piles and he can't find it there. It's maybe the other suitcase. He says, and then he says to me, then I got angry. And from the floor, I looked up at Rav Moshe Eichmann and I said to him, "Who says I need to fly to you to ask you for money? Maybe you need to fly to me to ask me to take your money. Who says my achrayas to Kiruv is greater than your achrayas to Kiruv? I used to have a business, you know, I'll do a deal with you. I'll take back my business, you take my organization, and you come to me and I'll give you tzedakah." Nobody has spoken to Rav Moshe Eichmann like this, probably in his whole life. No one has spoken from the floor. It's like 30 seconds, complete silence in the room. And then Rav Moshe Eichmann is a tzaddik of the year, and he says to him, "You're absolutely right." He said, "You're absolutely right." He's not a tzaddik of the year. And he says to him, and then the whole meeting just started, it just turned around. And by the end of that meeting, he gave me his personal number, and he promised to make a parlor meeting for Arachim at his offices in Olympia, York, in Manhattan, and he's going to bring all his friends. And 2 weeks later, Kachava, there was a meeting at Olympia, York, with all these wealthy people, and they raised $3 million in 1 hour, which in 1986 was a lot of money. Today it's a Lakewood Bar Mitzvah. But back then it was a lot of money. And Rabbi Wallace told me, I learned three big yesodos from that story. A, I learned who a Pinkus is. B, I learned you can raise $3 million in an hour. And C, I learned that when you really believe that the emes is on your side, and you really believe it, and you speak from the heart, nothing could stop you, and nothing could get in your way. I learned that Yisrael, he ended up becoming Moshe Eichmann's man in Eretz Yisrael. That's a story for a different time, and there's way more we could say, but I want to leave you, because it's the same idea. Who is helping whom? I came to you. I'm giving you a chance to give, to put a Kiruv organization on the map. And this Kiruv, I know a lot of people come to you. I know day and night they come to you. And organizations and yeshivas and meisters and people, and you know, everyone comes to you. You're the richest Jew in the world. But I'm giving you a chance now to save thousands and thousands of Yidden from not knowing anything and they can become from. Who is giving to who? Me? Am I giving to you? Are you giving to me? What's going on over here? And Ramesh just said, you know what? You're right. If I give you, you're the giver over here. And he ended up becoming a big supporter, and Arachim really did become the biggest Kiruv organization in Eretz Yisrael and saved thousands and thousands of people. So Rabbi said, we can learn many things from Kain, from the story of Kain and Abel. Many things. But one thing, if we take out to our own personal lives, this concept of when we have interactions with another Yid, with another person, to ask ourselves this simple question: who is giving to whom? And it might change the way we do things in with our families and with our Kodesh Baruch Hu. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.